Tu Igor Bielobradek, jest 16 maja 2017 i witam Was na 18 odcinku podcastu Rozmowy B2B. Jesteś marketerem i szukasz wskazówek, jak prowadzić skuteczny marketing B2B? Zapraszam do wysłuchania kolejnego wywiadu z praktykiem biznesu. W sytuacji, gdy coraz większa część budżetów marketingowych firm B2B pochłania content marketing oraz produkcja treści marketingowych, ten obszar staje się strategiczną inwestycją dla wielu firm. Potwierdzają to zarówno badania globalne, takie jak B2B Content Marketing 2017, Content Marketing Institute, a także te w Polsce. Tutaj odsyłam do badania stan marketingu B2B w Polsce 2015. Notabene już w przyszłym miesiącu pojawi się raport z kolejnej edycji tego badania. Dlatego też my, marketerzy, nie możemy traktować content marketingu już jak ciekawego eksperymentu, ale musimy się nauczyć, jak za jego pomocą przynosić konkretne, realne rezultaty biznesowe i jak to zrobić w sposób przewidywalny i powtarzalny. Niemniej jednak, jak wskazują badania, olbrzymia część polskich firm B2B nie ma udokumentowanej strategii treści. Jak zatem sformułować taką strategię dotyczącą treści? Jak zidentyfikować, które treści przynoszą największą wartość Twoim odbiorcom i Twojej organizacji? Jakie tematy powinniśmy poruszać, aby osiągnąć zamierzane rezultaty biznesowe? Na te tematy chciałbym porozmawiać z moim gościem podczas dzisiejszego podcastu. A mam dziś przyjemność rozmawiać z Rebeką Lieb. Rebeka jest doradcą, badaczem, keynote speakerem oraz autorką zajmującą się tematyką strategii content marketingowej oraz mediów cyfrowych. Jest autorką m.in. książki Content Marketing – Think Like a Publisher – How to Use Content to Market Online and in Social Media. Rebeka doradza m.in. takim firmom jak Facebook, Adobe, Honeywell, DuPont, IBM, Oracle oraz LinkedIn, żeby wymienić tylko kilka. Myślę więc, że nie mogłem zaprosić lepszego rozmówcy do tego tematu. Rebecca, I am so happy to have you today on the show.
Igor, it's a great pleasure to speak with you and I thank you for that very, very kind introduction.
Rebecca, almost all research on how marketing budgets are being spent consistently shows more and more of marketing dollars being shifted to the content creation. Why customers who might have not 30 seconds to spend on watching an ad might gladly surrender 30 minutes to dive into truly useful content? Why is that? What's going on with the marketing communication?
Well, I think you make a very, very valid point in that this is marketing communication as opposed to marketing interruption, which is certainly a type of communication, but it is not a type of interactive communication. So when you talk about an audience spending 30 seconds watching a television ad, that's something that they're effectively forced to do. That's a broadcaster saying, we're not giving you any more of the content that you came to see until you spend 30 seconds watching content that you did not elect to see. Whereas when a brand creates content that's entertaining, that's educational, that's useful, or that's there when an audience wants or needs it, when that content solves a problem, they will gladly surrender 30 minutes to dive into, as you say, truly useful content. So this is a fundamental shift from the marketing of interruption to the marketing of attraction.
All right, so this is the driving force that makes marketers spending more on content. And as content is becoming more prominent element of marketing budget, it inevitably draws attention of the executives, right? And surprise, surprise, they expect business results. How to measure return on investment in content? How to prove the impact on the bottom line of our business?
Absolutely. So first and foremost, you mentioned that about 15% of Polish businesses are what I like to call committing content marketing without having a content strategy. That situation mirrors the situation here in the United States, where we find that virtually all major businesses are involved in content marketing to some degree, but still over half of them, that's better than 15%, but it's not much better. More than half of U.S. businesses don't have a documented content strategy. And the purpose of a content strategy is to address the desired business result of content marketing. And you can't gauge the effectiveness and you can't measure the ROI of content marketing until you've put those goals in place. And without goals, you're involved in tactics without having an overarching strategy. So obviously, executives are going to be interested in return on investment in content. And there are many, many ways to prove that content does, in fact, provide a return on investment. One obvious way to look at this is sales and with sales attribution. And there are many, many different ways to calculate increase in leads, propensity to buy, brand affinity, and all those other metrics that lead up to greater sales. Another possible metric is filling a pipeline with sales leads, or even shortening the time it takes those leads to convert to a sale after they've become leads. But one of the things I've been dealing with as a research analyst is content marketing ROI that goes beyond sales. I think marketers are selling themselves short when they're not measuring other results of content marketing. So here's an example. One thing content marketing can address is customer service. Sony Europe noticed that customers were having a problem with a television set, and those customers were calling Sony's customer helpline, and they were very easily serviced by speaking to a phone operator. The problem, however, with the solution is that every time a customer called Sony, it cost the company €7 to handle that call. Sony's head of community, a guy by the name of Nico Hendricks in Amsterdam, created content and put it online. And in the very first week, he deflected 42,000 calls from the call center to this online self-serve service. So that is a return on investment of nearly $350,000. And that's just the first 2 weeks, that over time can be measured. And that's a number that you can take to the C-suite and say, look, our content is working. Our content is saving us money. In this case, not because it's selling more television sets, but because it's easing the burden on the call center, which is a cost center in terms of our operations. That's a business result.
Okay, so you were saying apart from the increased sale, content may be also a way of saving money.
Absolutely.
Would you go as far as Joe Pulizzi from Content Marketing Institute saying that the content marketing may even be a profit center? Is this something which resonates with you?
It does resonate with me, and I created about 6 years ago different levels of organizational content maturity. And that's going from being a very haphazard, experimental organization with content to being very results-oriented and strategic. And I called these phases stand, walk, and run. And my highest phase of content marketing maturity is what I call running. And those are those very few companies. This is really an almost aspirational model. Companies that have been able to create actual profit centers from their content. Most organizations are not going to be able to achieve this, and most organizations probably don't want to achieve this as a primary goal. But we have seen very content-driven companies like Red Bull turn their content into for-profit entertainment and even license some of their video footage and articles and magazine pieces for broadcast podcast and for use in other mediums. Another example is the Will It Blend content series from BlendTech, a very, very popular social media example of a company creating low-cost video that is available for free online at YouTube, but nevertheless has proven so popular with customers that the company is able to sell DVDs of its content marketing campaigns. So, you know, I'm sure that this is not the primary result, or it's a very desirable side effect of this type of content marketing. But nevertheless, BlendTech's first goal is to sell more blenders, and Red Bull's first and foremost aim is to become the number one energy drink brand.
Yes, I think you're right that in most cases that's not the primary goal, so let's stick with those first two. And as content become a strategic investment for many organizations, how to strategically plan for it? This is, I think, the key question for our conversation today. How to formulate your content strategy so you can identify what content provides most value to your audience and your organization?
Well, a content strategy, sort of repeating what I said a moment earlier, is first formulating what business problems or needs you want content to address. Maybe it's selling more of your products and services. Maybe it's establishing a better brand reputation or establishing thought leadership in a field or dominating a conversation around a topic or a subject you want to own. Maybe it's changing propensity to buy. With some brands, it's either even help developing new products and services. Once you've established what your goals with content are, and that is the strategic, the overarching strategic framework, you then move down a little bit further and establish how you're going to measure the success of your initiatives, which is going to enable you to optimize those initiatives. And then you move further down the framework and start developing plans that are repeatable frameworks for the creation, distribution, and measurement of that content. And this includes what workflows are needed, what personnel is needed, what software is needed, all the things that a newsroom or a production studio would consider. But you don't start assessing your needs or buying your software or hiring staff until you know what you're doing it for, what that big strategic idea is.
And how learning about the audience and knowing the audience content preferences fits into this conversation?
Well, knowing your audience and knowing their preferences is paramount. It's interesting because one of the things that you've used the term content creation a great deal, but content creation is only the first of 8 different work group scenarios that I've identified in terms of the content marketing workflow. So and parenthetically, it's interesting because when I've asked marketers in the United States and to a lesser extent in Europe, what are your biggest wants in content marketing and what are you going to invest the most money into? They all say content creation. They all say we need more content, we want more content, we can't make it fast enough, and that's our real need. But then when I say to them, what do you need, which is a very different question than what do you want, they say 2 things. They say we want to understand our audiences better, and we want to be able to measure the efficacy of our content better. So there's that difference again between strategy and tactics and between wants and needs. Marketers say they want to create content and they should, but first they're going to have to know how to measure it and who they're creating it for. And none of this can exist independently. It all has to be turned into a whole, and that whole is the content strategy.
I recall a quote from Robert Rose from Content Marketing Institute, which goes something like, "The point is not to create as much content as possible, but to create as little content as possible to achieve maximum results."
Absolutely. Why would your point be if you were advertising to make as many ads as possible or to buy as many expensive ad placements as possible? The idea is to get results. One of the reasons that we see this sort of frantic amount of activity in brands is that content really hasn't been strategized and therefore it's not operationalized within the organization. Almost every other marketing discipline has a department. There's branding, there's communications, PR, social media. All of these have departments and have staff. Very, very few organizations have content divisions or departments. And those that do are just beginning to get up to speed with the discipline. And so, of course, there are problems around things like creation because there's no operationalized procedure to get content done.
Content, in order to be impactful, must focus on a specific audience, especially when internet gives us content abundance. Some call it even a content shock. And even for the largest firms, it means not serving everybody. That's what strategy should define, what we are not going to do in order to focus on our primary goal. Often when I talk with my peers, I can see this is a very challenging step for marketers to come up with this definition and to make it clear for the rest of the organization what we are not going to do in this area. How to approach this decision? How to strike balance between being the best source information for a few or the noise for everybody?
Well, once you have goals and frameworks established and you know what you want content to achieve, it's very easy to focus on those goals and to ignore that which you're not going to do. And no organization can do everything. Not even media organizations can do everything there is to do in media. You know, the New York Times has a very different editorial mission than the Wall Street Journal or Rolling Stone or Vice Media. And so what helps establish what we're not going to do are guidelines and rule books. And mature organizations that have content strategies have editorial calendars, they have workflow processes, they have plans, they have style guides, editorial guides. All of these guide what they're planning to do, what they will do, and also what they won't do, so there isn't wasted effort and reduplicated effort. Good content strategy plans also plan for the reuse and repurposing of existing content, which is something that journalists do a great deal of, so that they don't have to reduplicate their reporting or other needs. They can use existing assets to keep moving and keep making an effective use of work they've already done.
All right, so let's move to another area, the content distribution. Content opens the opportunity for brands to act as publishers and build their own media, their own audience. But at the same time, there are other opportunities out there, like paid media, native advertising, and social media, which, by the way, increasingly becoming a paid channel as well. How to design the effective mix? Is building your own audience and old medium the ultimate goal? Or maybe the native advertising is the holy grail?
Well, of course, there is never going to be one best solution. Your best solution is going to depend on a lot of things, including your brand, your resources, where your audience is online. One of my topics of research, in addition to content marketing and content strategy, and I'm glad you brought up native advertising, has been a term that I coined with my co-author, Jeremiah Aoyang, and that's converged media. So I've spent a lot of time looking at how paid, owned, and earned media are coming together and forming new ways of coexisting. So native advertising, and I wrote the market definition report of that relatively new digital trend, is effectively content marketing, which is owned media, coming together with paid media, which is classic advertising, for the paid distribution of your content marketing. We're seeing social media come together with paid media. So on Facebook, on Twitter, and on the other social networks, you can socially promote your posts. What's very important to recognize, however, is that content content is at the core of all of these initiatives. You don't have advertising without content. We might call it creative because it's more expensive in an advertising context, but it's still content. You certainly can't have content marketing without content, and social platforms wouldn't exist unless they were constantly being refreshed with new content on a very, very frequent basis. So really, content, whether in paid, owned, or earned channels, is what I like to call, and this is actually the title of my forthcoming book, the atomic particle of all marketing. Without content, there is no marketing, whether it's paid, owned, or earned media.
Rebecca, it's so hard to cover content strategy in the single podcast, but luckily for our listeners, next month you are coming to Warsaw, Poland to run, together with Stephanie Lozy, head of content at Visa, the whole day workshop on content strategy. This will be the part of Power of Content Marketing conference. Can you tell us more about that? What actionable knowledge workshop participant may expect to get from it?
First, I'm incredibly excited to do this. I do teach content marketing and content strategy workshops all over the world. And I'm particularly excited to be doing this one with my good friend and collaborator, Stephanie Lozy, who has been head of content at Dell and is currently the head of content globally for Visa. So this is a major, major brand. When Visa does things like its promotion of the Olympics, Stephanie is the person behind the scenes actually making that happen. This will be a full-day workshop covering all aspects of content marketing and content strategy. We're going to discuss content from our real life experience. Myself as a research analyst and strategic advisor, and Stephanie from the perspective of somebody doing this in real life at a very big brand, right this minute. So she's going to talk a lot about the day-to-day struggles of getting content right within the enterprise. We're going to create exercises. So this isn't just going to be a workshop about us talking. We're hopeful that people will be able to come out with the rudimentary plans of a content strategy that they'll be able to take back to work on the following Monday morning and actually put to use. So we're going to have lots of case studies from all kinds of businesses across all kinds of verticals, B2B and B2C. And I'm so eagerly awaiting for what I'm going to get out of these workshops, not just what the students or our workshop participants will get out, but I'm dying to learn more about the problems that are being faced in the landscape in Poland and how we can use those insights to inform and help people, not just in Poland, but all over the world as we continue our work.
Many of our listeners have contributed to the research on B2B companies on the Polish market, Stan Marketingu B2B w Polsce, and the result was only paltry 15% of companies actually had content marketing strategy in place. So, now I'm addressing our listeners, I think I cannot recommend a better opportunity for you to learn about the content strategies. But, Rebecca, June is also the month you're releasing your new book, Content, the Atomic Particle of Marketing, the Definitive Guide to Content Marketing Strategy. Can you tell us why marketing should have a look on it?
In fact, I believe that the book publishes in Europe the same day that Stephanie and I will be running the workshop in Poland. So I don't know if I'll actually have even seen a physical copy of the book yet, but that's its published day, June 3rd. The book is really a compendium of my body of research on content marketing and content strategy. My claim to fame is that I've published more research on those topics than any other analyst in the field. And I wanted to be able to present that work to people in a easier, more digestible way to read it than as research reports, which, you know, many people like, but they're not necessarily the most you know, user-friendly formats for digesting content. So I'm very eager to hear what the reaction will be. The book is available for pre-order now on Amazon and all the other channels. And I'd also just like, if I can take a moment to say how excited I am personally about my very first trip to Poland. So I'm really looking forward to seeing Warsaw. The conference is going to be at the Google campus, which is always a very, very cool place to be. And I just couldn't be more excited about this entire endeavor and looking forward to insights from Poland, which I need many more of in the course of my research.
Oh, I'm sure you're going to get it. Thank you for the discussion and see you in Warsaw on the power of content marketing.
Igor, I can't wait to meet you in person and hopefully many of the listeners of your podcast. Thank you so much for the time and the opportunity.
Thank you very much. A ja, drodzy słuchacze, mam dla Was jeszcze jedną niespodziankę. Dla pierwszego słuchacza lub słuchaczki, która zgłosi się, mam książkę Content – The Atomic Particle of Marketing autorstwa Rebeki do oddania. Także czekam na kontakt i to wszystko, co przygotowałem na dziś. Do usłyszenia. Wysłuchałeś podcastu Rozmowy B2B. Wszystkie odcinki na stronie b2b-marketing.pl oraz w iTunes.